Welcome to the Abbreviated After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. I'm sitting here, and I'll be here the whole hour with my friend, one of the great talents ever to call Chicago and or Crystal Lake home. And Megan McDonough and I are just watching Joaquin Phoenix win Best Oscar Actor. Antonio Banderas is looking at him. Jonathan Pryce is looking at him. Everybody's looking at him. He gave a great speech when he won something else.
Can you imagine what goes through their head, you know?
Well, no, but the amazing thing, Megan, you and I are old friends, and you have a lot of fans out there. So, well, I understand this. You and I were talking about this. If you're a professional actor and you've spent your whole life reading lines, or you're a professional screenwriter or a director or even a cinematographer, you would think that you might be able to come up with something articulate and or interesting instead of like, and I'd like to thank my agent. I think Joaquin Phoenix has done it in other awards. He's done a great job of admiring his co-stars and the other people who have been nominated. And
right.
He seems like a good guy.
Right.
Otherwise, these guys all seem like they're fourth graders or something.
We were saying, regardless of whether you think you're going to win or not, have something.
Yes, you're one of like five people. Have something.
There must be a copywriter on staff who could help you out. If you're really stumped, hire a pro. Have something. Absolutely.
It is so nice to see you, as
Thank
always.
You. It's always good
you
to
are
see you.
Performing next Friday at Studio 5 in Evanston, a show called My Funny Valentine with the great, great pianist Fred Simon.
Who sends his absolute best to you and wanted to come with me. But
I'm surprised that Jason Brett isn't producing this thing, because he's best friends with both of those.
I know.
Both of you.
I know. We've got to get him in.
A couple of years ago, I hadn't seen you in some time, and I hadn't heard you except on CD in some time until I heard you sing with Jason on the porch he shares with his bride, Lauren Stryker.
Oh, my gosh. Beautiful home.
It simply reminded me, Megan, what a fixture you have been on the local song scene.
Truly.
For a long time.
Yes.
And then you and I sat down, and I learned a lot of stuff about you that I didn't know.
Yes, and wrote such a beautiful
Those of you who subscribe article. To the Tribune can certainly look that piece up to embellish this interview we're going to have. You, one of many kids growing up in Crystal Lake, how did you come to music? You came to it at a very young age.
I did. And, you know, I'd love to say I came to it, but it came to me.
How?
It came looking for me. You know, my parents were very, very, very glamorous, very beautiful. My mother was a singer back in the day in clubs, toured with the USO in the States. So she was always a singer, actor. I'm the seventh of nine kids.
Wow.
And so I just parlayed what got me attention, Rick, right into a career. From the time I was five, I can remember the moment. I'm in the basement. I'm in my tap shoes and leotard, and I'm practicing for the St. Thomas the Apostle Christmas Fair, where I will sing All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth, when the TV was also on, and I heard out of the TV, ha, 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 it's the Woody Woodpecker Show. And it was almost like this, what is that? I was transfixed all of a sudden by this character and the voice, and I thought, singing and being funny just seemed to be like the greatest. It was like seeing fire for the first time.
Wow.
It was really a pivotal moment.
And then you started performing in front of audiences.
Yes. Well, it was started with my family.
Right.
You know.
Always a fine audience. Maybe actually the best audience you could possibly
truly,
have.
Truly, truly.
And they appreciated it, and they loved it.
Exactly.
And then you wind up winning this talent show. How did that happen?
That was really a magical event. My dad passed away, and I lost
when you were only 11.
Yes, yeah. And my sister, 3 months later, in a car accident. It was just really
so much
loss.
So you kind of were seeking some kind of solace and comfort in music.
Yes. And the Christmas before The Great Loss, I got a guitar. I begged my parents daily. I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah. I begged them daily for a guitar. And I wrote a song, you know, Christmas Eve, as mass dragged by is when I found out I could fly. Out of the car and then inside where every light was glowing, there it was behind the tree for the last time quietly. I hugged it and it hugged me and the music started flowing.
Well, you wrote that at 11?
Yeah. No, I wrote that at... I wrote that...
Well, years, 11 or 12 right, or 13. It's several, a pretty, several pretty years impressive later, feat.
It was all about taking that guitar. I'd hold it close, told it things nobody knows. I took it everywhere I'd go. I even kissed it. That guitar and I were one. It was my earth, my air, my sun. I didn't know what was to come. Either way, I couldn't miss it. It was all about taking...
Did you teach yourself to play?
Yeah, I got the Folk Singers Guitar Guide, the Pete Seeger Folk Singers Guitar Guide. My best friend, Sid Barthel, lived across the street. She and I put a duo together, and she showed me some chords. We started writing songs. I started writing songs with her when I was 11. She was 13, so of course, they were love songs.
About all the cute boys in Crystal
exactly,
Lake.
Exactly, exactly. And when she moved away, I had to kind of teach myself then how to play guitar, and it was my first obsession.
Was it a kind of escape from the obvious pain of your father's and sister's deaths?
Truly. I had no way of processing
coping.
That.
Yeah.
So I just poured all those feelings into the guitar, into the songs. I wrote, I sang, I would just sit in the yard and play and play and play and play.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, you
three
enter...
3 years later, I... A friend, a family
WLS.
Friend.
WLS.
Yes. The WLS in Chicago Big Break Radio Contest. And a family friend had submitted my songs, my folk songs.
What were you recording these on? A big old tape recorder?
Reel-to-reel tape recorder.
One of those
recorder.
Old Studs Terkel tape
yes.
recorders, yeah.
And I got accepted into the contest, and I went down to Orchestra Hall, and Jason Brett was in a band that was competing also. I walked away with first prize. It was astonishing. I walked away with the first prize, which were Ludwig drums, a Gibson amplifier, guitars. I was a folk singer.
Yeah, right.
With my acoustic guitar, singing a song like You'll Know Me If I Ever Make It, and, you know, and a recording contract with Mercury Records. They recorded two singles. And they, in the words of my sister Brenna, she said, I guess they released you instead of the record, Hamek. But it was my first recording experience down at Universal Recording Studios. Hoyt Jones was the arranger. Bruce Swedeen was the engineer. Bruce Swedeen went on to be Quincy Jones' right-hand man, worked, you know, in L.A. I saw him years later. These amazing people that I got to.
Well, you fell in, you had to have not only innate talent, but you fell in love a bit with the music business too.
Yes.
And you will hear much. Dan Long's in there, and he's going to Megan McDonough will ask Dan to play a few selections. But when we come back after a short little commercial break, we'll talk about what happened in L.A. because that was. The other person I know, tell me I'm wrong about this, who got kind of seduced by L.A., Bill Quaitman.
Yes.
Bill Quaitman was this unbelievably striking movie star, handsome guy.
Right.
Who performed at the Earl of Old Town and got seduced. You're going to be the next big thing.
Yes.
Come out to L.A.
Yeah.
That's what they told you. We'll find out what happened to Megan McDonough right after this. One of the grand talents in the history of this town is Megan McDonough, who is sitting here next to me on Oscar night. We just watched, what's her name?
Renee Zellweger
win for Judy, and we were talking about the mean, tough life that Judy Garland had. You got, there's no question, Megan, that you got kind of seduced by the music business and come to L.A. and you're going to be the next big thing, aren't you?
Yes, yes. And I also have to say that, you know, My father had passed.
Right.
And my mother
was
really,
taking care of a lot of other kids.
Yes. And it was a little bit of go be famous, you know.
And help the family,
yeah,
too.
Help save the family. And I think when parents, you know, where was Judy Garland's mom?
Yeah, right. You're right.
I think the people that get seduced many times, and I coach young artists now.
Sure.
And I tell their parents, please pay attention to your own creativity. Please take some time for yourself. If you have a talented kid, that's fantastic. And listen, I wanted to. I could not wait. All I knew was I gotta sing, gotta sing, gotta sing, gotta sing, gotta sing. I had no. I was so far in over my head as far as business goes, and really didn't have anybody
helping or mentoring,
yes,
or looking out for you.
Right.
The business of it. You told me in that piece,
yes,
a few years ago, I will always love the music, but not the music business, even though you recorded some songs out in L.A. You're still, mm-hmm, a teenager. You went and enrolled yourself at North Hollywood
High School.
Because you wanted to finish. You wanted to be grounded,
yes,
in some fashion.
Yes.
And you hit the road as an opening act for John Denver.
Right.
For Steve Martin.
Yes. Yeah.
What was that like?
It was magical. I remember, and I love telling this story because I love stories of like manifestation, like having a dream come true.
Right.
I was, I had recorded my first LP for Wooden Nickel RCA, and Wooden Nickel Management 3, Jerry Weintraub and the,
sure,
company put me on tour, and one of the clubs was Denver at a little club called Ebbets Field. And a friend of ours was, my sister Brenna was traveling with me, and a friend of ours was going to school in Boulder. He came and picked us up at our hotel and took us to Red Rocks Park. Now, if you've ever been to Red Rocks Park,
yeah,
it is glorious.
Spectacular.
It's glorious.
Yeah.
And there's the stage, you know, in the amphitheater, but the stage is closed off, but you can stand on the lip of the stage,
right, and
look out at the audience. And I got up there, I climbed up there in my cowboy boots and bell bottoms, and I turned around, and this wish flew out of my heart. I would love to sing here one day. And about 8 months later, I was opening for John Denver at Red Rocks Park.
Wow.
And I did my set, and then John went on with his two musicians.
What kind of stuff were you singing?
I was singing my original songs.
All original songs?
Yeah, Guitar Picker and Pocketful, and I wish I had that album with me tonight. I brought
my... No, that's okay. We're going to hear you.
But that was the first... that's what I loved. I loved singing and performing and being sort of a... conduit channel of a bigger expression. Anyway, I went on, did my set, came off, John and two musicians went on, and his first chord, a shooting star, arced over the stage,
and
I thought, okay, now, come on.
Yeah, this is too much. God, you're shooting stars.
Take me now. I'm good to go.
Wow.
You know, and John was my gosh, he was huge then. I met him at the cellar door. He came to see me months before and gave me the nod, you know, like, yeah, she can open for me. And
what did you think then? Were Weintraub and his people saying, okay, you're going to be the next Linda Ronstadt here?
Yeah, Jerry was very much into, like, the typical, what do you want, you know, kid?
Sure, sure.
But he was a little bit like, the Wizard of Oz to me. You know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I remember the first time meeting him. He was a bigger-than-life guy.
Oh, no question.
I went into his office, and I remember in those days, my sister Bren and I had bought one pair of red clogs and one pair of blue clogs, and we traded off and had one of each for... You know, and my big joke was, I've got a pair just like these at home. And I walked in and I had these shoes on, and he says, yeah, hi, kid. oh, I bet you got a pair of those just like those at home. I thought, oh, there goes my
line.
My big joke. But I was so intent on pretending and acting as if I know exactly what I'm doing.
That's tough for a teenager, though.
It is. For a 17, 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And so, in their defense, if they even need any, I must say, I'm sure I appeared like I was a pretty tough kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I got this. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. I had no clue. No clue.
But also, you just had no one to help guide the way.
No.
That's the problem.
And that is... That was the problem.
Yeah.
That was the problem. Yeah. And I didn't even know enough to ask. And that's shame also. You know, I love Brene Brown's work about shame. Shame is, you know, S-H-A-M-E, should have already mastered everything. Don't ever let them see you sweat. Don't ever let anybody know that you don't know.
Yeah.
And especially when you're a teenager in Hollywood and you've got a record deal and you're on tour and you're like,
no, I can't. I can't even imagine how heady that would be.
Yeah.
Before we take a break at the bottom of the hour, let's hear. What would you like the great Dan Long to play off that CD of yours?
Yes, this is a CD of beautiful jazz standards and love songs. Let's play the first track. That's all.
I can only give you love that lasts forever. And the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own is yours and yours alone. That's all. That's all. Springtime, or a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light would warm a winter night. That's all. That's all. There are I am sure who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are two arms to enfold you and a love even time can't destroy. That my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all. That's time can't destroy. small. Say it's me that
is that not a voice, ladies and gentlemen? You can learn more about Megan's upcoming Friday performance with the great Fred Simon on piano at Studio 5 in Evanston. Now, is your website, dear Megan Megan?
Yes.
That's a cool website. MEGON.com. You'll get a lot there. You can read a lot about Megan. There's some other upcoming performances, not just Studio 5. She's going to be in Ohio. Delaware, Ohio, with the Unity Church. Right. Then she'll be back here at the venue in Aurora. You've got some good gigs. We have some commercials to do, and we're going to figure out what Megan did after she came back from being star-studded and shooting stars across the thing at Red Rocks. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back. We got another half hour with Megan McDonough. The Oscars are over. Parasite won Best Film, and the people who took the award home seemed very happy.
So happy.
So that's your Oscar update from Megan McDonough and Rick Kogan. We were talking with Megan. She'd gone out to L.A. She'd been opening act for Steve Martin and, more particularly, John Denver. You came home, finally. Were you burned out, or what was the reason that you had it?
Burned out. I had had an unfortunate fling with a certain guitar player, became privy to some to knowledge about, from about a secretary that worked for Jerry and you know
the dark side of the music business.
I call it Rocky Mountain All Time Low, the dark side of Kumbaya. That's the name of my show.
The Rocky Mountain Low.
Rocky Mountain All Time Low, and that was those were some dark days.
Well, because you were also, again, you were very young, you're a teenager.
I had no idea.
And that kind of stuff can beat you up, but you did come back here.
Yes.
Which is probably around the time we met, and you started playing places like The Quiet Night and the Earl of Old Town and Orphans and Bygone Orphans and Bygone Ratzos, which was an unbelievable club.
Great club. Right, and then Holstein's.
And then Holstein's, the Holstein the brothers Holstein up in their
place. Right, the brothers Holstein's, great guys.
And you loved that, didn't you?
I loved that. That was really a vital community.
Oh.
We were packing them in at Orphans, me and my band. I and my band were you know, just playing there a couple of weekends a month. Danny Johnston, I don't know if you ever knew Danny. He owned Orphans. The guy really knew how to run a saloon.
Yeah.
It was the bar in front,
music in back,
and John.
It was one of those. It was one of the clubs. It was wonderfully eclectic in that on a given night, you didn't know if you were going to see a folk singer or a jazz combo or a poet or.
Yes.
It defined in its time a Chicago nightclub.
Right. Right. And, you know, some of us got deals, you know, then Steve Goodman got a deal and John Prine got a deal. Steve and John and Bonnie were kind of in a club. I was not in that club.
Right.
I was a little younger than those guys, you know. And they were Earl's
people.
Crew.
No question.
You know, I played the Earl, but I was never in that club. And I remember Earl, if you played the Earl, and, you know, Earl had the latest alcohol license.
Sure, last call.
4 a.m.
4 a.m. bar.
You would have to play every set.
I know.
And it was right across the street from the Second City.
Yeah.
You can imagine the knuckleheads would stagger in
the
about
glory,
three.
Yeah, the glory days of the Earl, where if you were playing that last hour at the Earl, where at most places people are just trying to figure out what time it is and trying to pretend they're sober enough to get one more round served to them. That's a bath by fire those old days at the Earl too. Wow.
And your dressing room green room was this little office. Earl had tribunes stacked floor to ceiling.
Well, I'm just looking. The thing is, you know, you knew Richard Harding, who owned The Quiet Night.
Richard.
They were real. Who wound up later driving a cab and
And who had moved to Aspen for a while, opened a club in the Jerome Hotel.
Right, the old, great, famous old hotel there.
Yes, called me and said, I want you to come out and play. He called me out there. He booked me. In the week, there's no snow. But I'll tell you what, it was the most fortunate week for me. I met Christine Lavin. This woman came in with this fellow in horn-rimmed glasses, a bow tie, and a cashmere overcoat. And I thought, maybe not from Aspen. So Christine Lavin had opened for Asleep at the Wheel down the street, came to the Drew Home Hotel, saw my picture, came in. She said she requested a song, Kevin Jane, from my first album.
Wow.
I thought, nobody from my family's here. I finished my set. I got off stage, and she introduced herself. She said, I have loved that record from the time I was stranded in a friend's place in Florida. It was rainy. I was going through his records. I played it nonstop, and she said, and here you are. I've always wondered who you were, where you were. She and I started the Four Bitchin' Babes in 1989, toured for, you know,
a long
forever.
Time.
It's still
yeah, you still
know,
tour.
You know.
You're still one of the Four Bitchin' Babes. Wow,
yeah.
That's where that happened? I had no idea.
Yes, it all started in Aspen, Colorado. You have no idea. You know, things like that you can't plan for. No, I've never been a planner.
They also give you faith in life,
truly.
Do they not?
Truly.
As much as someone wants to be a pragmatic person about, especially about the entertainment business, it's impossible.
If you don't have a little bit of that.
You need to open yourself up to, you know, to rich, to, there are a lot of people, as you well know, Megan McDonough, who getting a call from the legendary Richard Harding saying, you got to come play. Yeah. I got a bar at the hotel in Aspen. You got to come play. Who would say, well, you know, Richard, I'm busy that day.
You know, but it was like, okay, sure. You know, I'm game. I met a film director who put me in this film. His name was George Peruvanati. He was the first Indian I'd ever, he was a director. He was doing a film on Aspen, asked me to be in it. I wrote a song for the film. He taught me what namaste meant, the light in me, so it's the light in you. It was 1979.
Wow.
These are things that, thank goodness, you can't plan them.
Yeah.
It's enough to keep you thinking, okay, one more day.
The other thing is you opened yourself up to a lot of theater work, too.
Yes.
Musical theater work in
yes.
Chicago when there was musical theater happening here.
Yes. I was just rehearsing with Fred Simon,
yeah.
who sends his very best.
Good
He'll
guy.
Be with me.
He
and I have a new Burt Bacharach, Hal David show called What the World Needs Now that we'll be doing at the venue. But we did it at Studio 5 in September. Sold out. People loved it.
Tell me more about this Studio 5. That's where Megan and Fred will be this coming Friday. Studio 5 is run by Steve Rashid.
Steve Rashid.
He's an old friend of mine, too. Tell me about it. I feel terrible I haven't been there.
Oh, you got to come. Steve Rashid and Bea Rashid are two of the finest, most powerful souls I know.
And talented.
And talented, yeah. Wildly talented. Bea's theater, Evanston Dance, it's in this really cool strip mall, lots of space. Steve opened up Studio 5 during the week
It's a recording studio. Is it?
It's part of the dance studio, but on the weekends, it is transformed into this glorious music room, which has the finest sound. Steve records and videotapes the show, plays the show on his radio show for WDCB.
Right.
He has
right,
a jazz show.
Right.
It's just fantastic.
Now, when you and Fred conceptualize the show, I mean, it's My Funny Valentine.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously
right.
love
songs.
So
we say, bring your Valentine, funny or not. You know, great
yeah,
love songs.
Good relationship or not, bring your Valentine. Let's hear something. Do you have anything on this CD from the show?
Yes. In fact, You Taught My Heart to Sing is in the show.
We don't know what cut it is, but Dan Long is a genius at finding these things.
He is indeed. He's got the.
He's got it. He's holding it up. That's good enough.
Maybe just a little bit of it. It's another ballad.
Mm-hmm. sound of violins, the song of birds high on the wing. You taught my heart to sing. Does this heart of mine feel like a valentine? You speak and suddenly it's spring. You taught my heart to sing.
Songs you will hear Megan McDonough sing, and accompanied by Fred Simon on piano at Studio 5 in Evanston this coming Friday night. All the details you need and more, and you should go to her website. I love the website. It's Megan, MEGON.com. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Welcome back. I sadly only have about 10 minutes more with Megan McDonough. We've been giving you updates on the Oscars. The Oscars are over. Go to YouTube and you'll get all you need. Megan, your career, give me a state of the Megan McDonough career as we speak. You're still performing with the Four Bitchin' Babes.
Every now and then. That's kind of a rotating position. 28th year for the Babes.
Wow.
28th year.
Wow.
My gosh. The only thing I did that long was go to grade school. I occasionally gig with them. I'm really excited about this new show, the Burt Bacharach Show, because the first half of the show is Bacharach David songs. Second half of the show, some Megan McDonough songs. There's an Annie Lennox cover. There's maybe a Joni Mitchell cover. There's a Fred Simon song.
Right.
You know, he's written some beautiful music for Robert Creeley's poems. I really feel this resurgence of getting gigs, playing out. I took a little time off to, you know, kind of get my bearings.
Sure.
But I feel really good and happy and
you look really
energized.
Good and happy.
Thank you.
No, you do.
And for no particular reason other than I can still do this.
Yeah.
I can't ask for more, you know.
You said when we were talking earlier about how music came to you, do you think of it as a gift?
Oh my gosh, that I get to open every day. I know that sounds corny.
No,
and
it doesn't.
I say all the corny stuff.
No,
but
it doesn't.
When I sing, still when I sing, I get this feeling, you know, that it is a gift. I'm grateful. Is every night Saturday night? No.
Of course.
Because I'm still president and janitor of my company, and I'm looking forward to firing my janitor and hiring somebody really good. But Lauren Corain, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
She's so helpful. And And I'm thinking about it tonight. When I work with Fred, and I just came from rehearsal for our show Friday, I think I know so many wonderful musicians who make me a better musician. Yeah. And who just, I have been so helpful. You've been so incredibly helpful to me. All these many years, you know, that to have our connection, to have your help. And I was saying that I drove down to the studio, and I love Chicago.
Yeah.
I don't want to move.
No, why should
you? You know, I love Chicago. And you can get anywhere from O'Hare.
Yeah,
you know, I'm going to go someplace warm.
You can actually get anywhere in your car.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'll go someplace warm, probably March, April. You know, I'll be, because this is a difficult month to get through. But for the most part, life's good. I'm ready for it to get better.
See, one of the weird things now about this era is the recording scene is so bizarre. I mean, I don't even know how to refer to the music business as we once knew it.
Yes, it is certainly not unrecognizable to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we artists have to step down. We simply have to step, you know, make room. Just move over.
Right.
And let's do this, because I'm learning so much from young artists, you know.
Sure.
I now teach singing and songwriting, voice and songwriting at the Music Institute of Chicago.
Institute in Evanston?
I'm at the Winnetka campus and now at the Chicago campus. I have some songwriting students at the Chicago campus.
You should perform there. I think that's one of the great performing.
Oh, I was just there last night
Nichols
at Nichols Hall.
Is one of the most amazing.
I was just at the Music Institute soiree. I sang a song with Fred, an original song.
That's great.
And being in that room.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, my God.
It's one of the great
spaces. Oh, my stars.
That's where you and Fred should come up with a concert thing. We will have Jason Brett produce it.
Yes. Jason,
and I'll promote it on the radio. Jason, get to work. come up, conceptualize an evening there, because I think it'd be a sensation.
And listen, Jason can sit in on drums and vocals.
That's right. We'll give him a chance.
He's a fantastic musician, Jason Brett.
I agree.
Multi-talented.
He's wasted his career as a producer.
And how about Miracle? How about his musical?
The musical he wrote, conceptualized by Billy Meravitz, that played at the Royal George. He's a multi-talented guy, but I want him to produce a Megan McDonough Fred Simon show at the Music Institute, at Nichols Hall, at the Music Institute of Chicago.
I'm wiggling my nose like Samantha in Bewitched. That'll happen.
Let's play out the show with us. Leave you with a couple more minutes of Megan McDonough singing. Dan, pick any song you like, because the voice is one in a million. So go, ladies and gentlemen, next Friday to Studio 5 in Evanston. Go to Megan's website, meganmegan.com, meganmegan.com. Here she is. Good night from the Megan McDonough Rick Kogan Oscar Show.
Thank you, Rick.
Well, thanks, honey.
I should have saved those leftover dreams. Funny, but here's that rainy day. And I laughed at the thought that it might turn out this way. Where's that worn-out wish that I threw aside? After it brought my love anew. Funny how love becomes a cold, rainy day. Funny that rain. Here. that worn out wish that I threw aside after it brought my love so